Personally, I have seen patients.
I'm gonna ask you not to give your opinion. You can ask questions about the topic,
I'm gonna ask
but do not give an opinion on whether you're in favor or against.
I'm not saying whether I'm in
Thank
favor.
Thank you, Ms. Hunter.
I'm just saying that I believe that patients see somebody that has a DPT and they feel that that therapist is better than someone that just has a BS or an MA. And that even though the DPT maybe is entry level right out of school, and that the PT that has a BS or an MA has a vast amount of experience. So I think there is some confusion on that.
If I may respond to the comments made, the Arizona Physical Therapy Association works continually to educate the public about levels of education, both for physical therapists and physical therapist assistants and other personnel who may they encounter in a physical therapy setting. So we feel like this is another step in that process of helping the public understand who they are seeing, what services they're getting, and what's the education. We play this game at my practice. Practice it well all the time because we have PT-DPT for more than half of the staff now. We're about that perfect 68% split. And again, it becomes a point of continued education, and we feel like this will be the next step for us in Arizona to begin using DPT as the regulatory designation because that's where the majority of the providers are at.
Okay, thank you.
I'm not sure exactly how to phrase this one, but how concerned would you are you that there that because of the confusion between the professional designation and the academic designation, that there will be those who will not be able to distinguish between the two? And maybe unfortunately, we see people here before the board who are not good at distinguishing right and wrong and good and bad. And we've had people here who said, why can't I use DPT? I earned that. Well, you're not licensed. You can't use it. But I earned it. Okay? I know somebody personally who uses it and has never become licensed. He did graduate. So I'm afraid that if we have this, we can use DPT as the professional designation. I'm afraid people who are ignorant, otherwise ignorant, will just say, hey, on graduation day, I am a physical therapist.
Good point.
And they'll be before your board at some point if they're not licensed.
I would hope that's not the case, and that we do a better job of educating our students when they graduate that you're not a physical therapist until you pass the national board exam. And again, as Blair said, you're still going to have some before you. It's just.
Well, I wish we could turn the clock back and never, ever, ever give the academic degree DPT. That was the worst mistake we ever made. But it's not my opinion.
It's getting close there.
I'm going to put a notch on all of you.
No.
But is there a question in this world?
I'm already in trouble. You can make it mine.
I mean, I don't know. We were pretty blind when we didn't see this coming.
Unintended consequences.
So, again, we're not going to make an opinion. If somebody requests the board to decide whether they're in favor, neutral, or against, we will bring that as an agendized item to which we could discuss further those things.
Dr. Cornwell, thank you for the opportunity to address those two items. Other members of the Arizona Physical Therapy Association would like to address item number 3 on student supervision.
All right. So thank you for letting us talk with you about the student supervision issues today. Before today, I sent to the board, I sent to Karen a couple of documents. The one was related to the best practice in clinical education through innovation. The other one was our request to the board for discussion. And then the other one was just a chart or a graphic of states and how they address the supervision of students in their practice act. So I don't necessarily want to go through all of that with you again. But I think what we're here today is to begin the discussion.
Dr. Ferris, can I interrupt you? Can you just introduce yourself since you came to sit at
I'm sorry.
Table?
Sure. My name's James Linsky, physical therapist in Arizona.
Thank you.
And prior to this, all of the directors of PT and PTA programs in the state and some of their directors of clinical education came together to meet to discuss this and to talk about how to approach the board to allow for the educational practices in Arizona to be the best practices that have been determined in the nation. And right now, we can't necessarily do that with the way students are placed into under supervision. We've also looked at some of the laws, and there seems to be some inconsistencies with the substantive policy and in the legislation, where the substantive policy places students in under the supervision rules, and that the legislation does not do that, nor did it intend to do that. With that in place, it puts the educational institutions somewhat limited into initiating some of the best practices in clinical education, as well as in serving the public through community service and other types of things. And so that's what we're here to discuss today. I would like to just kind of maybe give a little bit of history for those who may or may not have been here. But I'm going to turn that history aspect over to Blair, since he is the one that kind of took that around with it.
And I'm not an educator. So my role, I met with Jim and with the educators just to take a look at this topic of the substantive policy that has been in place since 2006. And it relates to how the board in the past interpreted assistive personnel and assigned students to that classification. And I need to go back a little bit further just to, again, give you a history. In the Federation, I served from 1994 to about 98 as chairing the Model Practice Act Task Force. We developed the Model Practice Act that the Federation had, and I was involved with the first three versions of that, and so I knew it fairly well. I was the state chapter legislative committee chair when we then moved to amend the State Practice Act and use the Model Practice Act, that was Model 1, as the format for our new practice act. And going back to, you know, to version 1, which is what I have in my hand here, the Model Practice Act, it has a very specific recommendation related to the term other assistive personnel. And that was, at the time, there was a lot of discussion that took place about, you know, physical therapists utilizing people like exercise physiologists, for example, in cardiac rehab practice, or massage therapists, or athletic trainers in orthopedic practices. Mm-hmm. And the language focused on how to include those while not, you know, not setting up joint practices where it was a PT, athletic training practice. And so they would work still under the direction of a physical therapist and be categorized as other assistive personnel and could be, as our statutes focus on, they could actually be called by their title as an athletic trainer and as an exercise physiologist, but they would be under this umbrella of other assistive personnel. The statutes clearly separated students from that categorization, and this memo that you have here points out some of those ways where they're separate, they're not included. The substantive policy is the first place we saw the board in 2006 define students as within the other assistive personnel. And again, there's no place even currently in statute or rules that make that clarification, only in this substantive policy. So my advice to the educators was to, you know, I'm not here to advocate for, you know, for unlimited amount of supervision. People like Karen know that that's not my role in the House of Delegates currently. But I do feel passionate about the current law and having something that is substantiated by law or rules that you're operating by. And I think that there's some issues here that need to go back and be revised or revisited, because I don't think they're substantiated in statute. Let me just give you one little example, just one that's not in that memo. There's one example that's not in the memo. When you go to your your disciplinary grounds for disciplinary action in the statutes. Ground six is, says this, failing to supervise assistive personnel, comma, physical therapist students, or interim permit holders. There in that stat, there's another example of it in statutes where students are not categorized in this assistive personnel. They're completely separate from that. So all I'm suggesting is that you need to go back and look at that substantive policy. I think there's some foundational issues there that might need to be looked at.
And there are other issues related to community service, related to research, that if you were to interpret the law directly, that puts physical therapy faculty at risk, that other faculty of similar quality, qualifications, and tenure aren't even exposed to. For example, an exercise physiologist faculty member can supervise more than a handful of students doing research and get along quite well in their labs, graduate assistants and these things, as many as they can afford. If you look at the law, and because of the education inclusion, physical therapy faculty can only supervise two students doing research at any given time. That limits the faculty's ability to fulfill their role, to educate students in a proper manner, and to forward the profession as well. The supervisory rules related to community service. I'll just take what I do, for example, Special Olympics. We're going out and we're doing a very simple test. Fun Fitness is a skills test that pretty much anybody can do, but it's supported and funded by the American Physical Therapy Association. It was an APTA movement, and so they want physical therapists to do it, but we're not providing physical therapy. We're just doing a screen on the athletes, looking at their flexibility, their strength, and these types of things that pretty much anybody could do. And we've been questioned why only physical therapists can do it. But in order to deliver this to the students or to the athletes, we have to have one physical therapist for every two students there. On any given day, all the other healthy athletes programs can screen 250, 300 athletes. The best day we've done in the last 10 years that I've been a clinical director in Arizona is 125 because of the capacity that we have in working with the athletes and trying to follow the rules as close as we can, or the substantive policy, if you will. I know my colleague Jim Linsky has... Wait, let me go back just a second. I just came off serving on the American Council of Academic Physical Therapy Board of Directors for the past 3 years. This organization represents 95% of all the PT programs in the nation. The best practice models that I shared with you came out of the American Council of Academic Physical Therapy's task force to look at what are the models of physical therapy education in the clinical setting that are most effective. And some of those models, for example, the 2-to-1 ratio or the team learning aspects or the integrated clinical experiences are very difficult to do in Arizona because of the supervisory policy as well. At that point, I'll turn it over to Jim related to some other comments related to research and such.
Well, thank you, Board, for allowing me to speak. So this is kind of a dual issue. One is that designation of students as assistive personnel that Blair spoke to, and that we believe is not a proper designation of students in that. And then the second is the inclusion of students in the supervision ratio. 30 states, so you get, some of you just mentioned you're at the Federation of State Board meeting. From the Federation of State Board's data itself, over 30 states do not include students in their supervision ratio. And in Arizona, medicine has the term adequate under their supervision ratio. They do not have a hard supervision ratio for third and fourth year medical students. Occupational therapy, from my looking through their documents, and I could be wrong, but do not have a hard ratio for supervision and do not have a hard ratio for students in supervision. And these are all boards, and nursing as well allows faculty to supervise, I think, 10 nursing students in their practice. So I would just request to this board, and I think one of the requests of the board is to review that designation as assistive personnel, and then look at that best practice would be possibly removing students from the supervision ratio.
You know, as a board,
no, we you're not speaking that. As the board, right?
Okay,
Ms. Hunter.
Just as an example of unintended consequences.
I know this is hard for all of you.
That we
hang
see.
In there.
Unintended consequences. I agree. I understand what you're saying, but then you're going to have possibly someone that has 20 students. Now, you know, what kind of direction, what kind of supervision, what kind of quality of education are those 20 students going to get? And they can come before the board and go, well, I'm allowed to do that.
So let me
so hold on. Can I respond?
Yes, sure, man.
So first, let's talk about the assistive personnel designation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that the law already says direct supervision. Okay. So removing from the assistive personnel does not change, would then allow the board to create rules for student supervision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That is appropriate to best practice. So, yes, I understand what you're saying that, okay, you remove, so you do deregulation, and someone somewhere is going to, the possibility of someone running
yeah.
with it and abusing it. Okay.
Sure.
So I would speak to that. So one, all of the schools, physical therapy and physical therapy assistant programs in the state of Arizona are accredited or seeking accreditation from CAPTE. CAPTE has some pretty strict guidelines about clinical education. So if a program was routinely putting students in a situation where they were one of 20 for supervision on their clinical sites, they would likely be cited by CAPTE very quickly, okay? Especially if a complaint went to CAPTE about that. Also, if a site was designating that that's the only way they took students, I would put out there that no schools or very few schools would send their students to that site if they weren't getting good education. There is a robust evaluation of clinical sites that are done by the schools. There's robust evaluation of the schools that are done by clinical sites. And I think that problem, while a possibility, would not likely happen.
CAPTE would not be that quick.
I'm okay? a CAPTE reviewer.
Unless there's an actual complaint.
Right.
That means that they're going to look at clinical right. education every 10 years. That's 10 years is not quick.
So in these 30...
So let's not use... I don't think it's wise to use CAPTE as okay. our
so in the 30 states that do not have that, is there a problem currently that's been reported?
Do you have any data that suggests there is or is not?
I do not have any data except for...
That would be nice.
It would go back to the clinical instructor.
Except for there are 30 states that currently, minimum of 30 states that practice that way currently.
So, and I also want to add that, you know, that Jim was talking about, our directors of clinical education, their job is to ensure a quality educational experience for the students in the clinic. And let me look back here. I don't think any of them in the room that are back there right now would allow their students to be put in a substandard educational experience situation. I think the other thing is that, you know, I came from Arkansas prior to coming to Arizona, and the students are not in the supervisory rules there. And it's really the physical therapist that needs to be accountable and responsible for the supervision. And, you know, I know you all see those who are not necessarily accountable on a regular basis, and I hope that doesn't jade you to the fact that there's a number of really good clinical instructors out there who we've partnered with, who we've educated, who we've brought into our core faculty, if you will, and they know what our students need, they know what we're looking for, and they provide a quality educational experience. And those are the people that we're partnering with in this.
I have to agree with Dr. Donahue. I'd love to see some evidence around the states that don't have students in the ratio. There are 17 states that have absolutely zero supervision ratios. Arkansas is one of them. So the PTA can supervise any number of people, including students. So I'd love to see, and I looked all over the FSBPT website to see if there was anything on there about looking at regulation between states that don't have supervision ratios, states that don't have students in their supervision ratios, and then those states that do have limits, you know, on how many people a PT can supervise.
Mrs. King, what type of information would you like to see from those states? What would we be looking for to bring back to you?
I think it'd be interesting to see if there are, I mean, even just information from state, different schools, DCEs, you know, on any sort of complaints or, you know, or challenges in students. Because thinking about CAPD and thinking about students, I have no doubt that one school would not put 20 students in one place. However, being a clinical site, we are inundated with requests, and I could see a site potentially accepting one student from 15 different schools. Do you know what I mean? But if there's no, if it's a site that's, you know, doesn't necessarily practice on the up and up. So that being said, it wouldn't be a CAPTI thing, so it wouldn't be one school.
Right. You know, we obviously would be glad to look into that and bring that data back to you. And from my 14 years experience in Arkansas, in physical therapy education, those issues did not exist.
And I suspect they don't. Yeah. I'd love to not assume that. It would be easier, right, I think, to be super supportive if we knew that there was no difference in the states, that much difference at least, the states that had the ratios that we have. Because I'm not going to say my opinion, I think it would be helpful in supporting it.
No, I don't disagree there, and I think that that information can be brought forward. In fact, there's a task force from ACAPT and the APTA and the Academy of Physical Therapy Education. I have a hard time remembering that section. But their task force they put together to look at the clinical education strategies and best practices in clinical education. We'll be bringing out their report here fairly soon.
Perfect.
So yes. If I can ask a question to the panel, since we're also discussing the fact that some people have no ratio and some people don't, do each of you believe that there should be a ratio of the number of people that are supervised by a licensed physical therapist? And if so, or if not, can you expand on that answer?
I'll start. I like medicine's role, and that it's kind of left up to the licensed clinician to how many that they can adequately supervise.
And so you're talking about physicians who
well, I said I like their model.
Okay. And are they not licensed when they're doing their final clinicals and roles? Do they not have a provisionary license?
Medicine is a two-tiered process. They have their what they call undergraduate, which is confusing because it's graduate education. And those first 4 years, they're not necessarily licensed, but they are licensed once they go into their residency, which they call postgraduate education or graduate education.
Right.
So they would be similar to a physical therapy student who is entry-level, going through the entry-level program to the what they call the graduate medical education, but they're not licensed at that point in time, and or the resident who we actually call resident in their postgraduate residencies who are licensed at that time.
So the question is, do you believe there should be a ratio for physical therapists supervising assistive personnel, yes or no?
No.
And why?
I do not.
Okay.
Let me share my view.
Actually, I think this gentleman is asked to be recognized at least twice.
Go ahead.
So, again, it goes back to the issue. Students are not assistive personnel.
Well, that's your contention. So, my question is simply, do you believe that a physical therapist, whether they're aides, students, PTAs, that there should be a ratio in the state of Arizona, yes or no?
Again, if I can please finish my answer. Students, according to our law, are not considered assistive personnel. So, yes, I believe there is a ratio for physical therapists and how many assistive personnel they can supervise. I think there should be a separate consideration for how many students a physical therapist can supervise.
And how many do you think that should be if you believe there should be a ratio?
I think depending upon the actions that are being taken. So if it is, well, this board now governs, according to the interpretations of the laws that this board enforces supervision ratio on students in research. It enforces it on service. And then it enforces it in clinical practice.
So if we took the student out of the ratio, what do you believe the number that a physical therapist, if you believe in a ratio, should be able to supervise and why?
In clinical practice, 3 to 4 is a reasonable number.
And you base that decision on what parameters?
I would interject just a second, and that I would kind of hold any numbers until we get the report from the Clinical Education Task Force. Okay.
That's fine. I'm just trying to get a feel for... Yeah, I'm just trying to get a feel for if you think there should be a ratio or not, because that is certainly a discussion that this board would entertain. And if so, what is it, and why do you believe that, and what is that based upon?
I think there should be multiple ratios, and that is based upon the risk to the public.
So you believe that unfeathered, no ratio might be a risk to the public?
I think...
For any of support personnel, including techs and aides?
If you do a 1 to 20 ratio, as Ms. Hunter talked about, that likely is a risk to the public, yes.
Okay.
By statutory definition, a student is working clinically under the on-site supervision. So there is supervision. And I believe that provides the foundation for promulgating rules related to supervision. So I think that board could do that, could promulgate rules based upon, the input from the population or the faculties or the student or the academic institutions, from your experience, whatever. I think that in 2006, the board took a shortcut and erred in assigning that through that ratio. And my suggestion here is you go back and undo that and then consider what those new rules that you might promulgate related to supervision. I don't have an opinion relative to the numbers or the ratio you would have, but I believe you have the authority to do that based upon what's in statute.
That's correct. And I'll just remind everyone here that we've been under a rule moratorium, well, probably since Governor Ducey has been in office. Mm-hmm. So what's that? 2015. So, but it doesn't preclude the board from developing a committee that would go in and investigate what would potential rules be if they decide to do that, which is not the preview of this conversation.
Mm-hmm. But that's all formal and informal rulemaking, so any kind of committee is informal rulemaking.
Right, and the board does have the power to form a committee.
I just want to correct a statement.
Oh, that's right. We can't even informally write it. We can just come up with grand ideas.
I just want to correct a statement I made because of the CAPDI situation. I said it probably goes back to the clinical instructor. I really meant the ACCE.
I have a question.
Which is now called the clinical coordinator of
clinical
education.
Coordinator.
It's all a bunch of name changes. Yeah. So I guess the other part of the discussion that I'd like to bring up is that from a university point of view, we're not only are we under a programmatic accreditation process, but we're under the Arizona State Board of Secondary. Secondary Education, which is also we're also under the Higher Learning Commission, which is a regional accrediting body, which also reports to the Department of Education. And so we're highly regulated to begin with, and the education of our students is a prime. Importance to us. And so we're not looking to put students in any type of situation where they have a poor educational experience. What we're asking for is the ability to provide them a best practice model education, which includes things like grand rounds, integrated clinical experiences, team-based learning, 2-to-1 ratio of education where students actually learn from students as much as they learn from their CI. So that's what we're asking for, and we're asking to be allowed to do that in Arizona so that our Arizona graduates are not inferior to graduates from other states.
Yeah. So 2-to-1 is prohibited?
No, it's not prohibited, but if you look at it, Dr. Cornwall, the way the ratio is written, a PT can supervise, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, two assistive personnel, unless one of those is a PTA. And then they can supervise 3 assistive personnel. Well, you throw 2 students into that mix, if they don't have a PTA, then they can't have any assistive personnel helping with them. And that puts a little bit of strain on the productivity and the clinical output and these types of things, and there's some resistance to that because of this ratio.
So I don't know. It sounded like you're talking about it's about productivity and rather than student education. I mean,
well, that's the resistance we're getting from the clinical sites into doing these best practice models. They're like, well, we can't do that because we can't supervise that many students at a time, and that many students is really based upon what type of model we're talking about.
Yeah, there's a couple of points that I'd like to hear your comments on. Is one is the whole, you know, to be licensed, you have to have a minimum competency. Students, by definition, are not there yet.
Correct.
And the reason you set them into a clinical setting is to give them, for lack of a better word, battle experience, to draw on the experience of a professional who's been licensed, who has fought the battle. That takes time. And so if you're saying, well, we can't count it into number of people being supervised, then the supervision of these people, treating patients, you're losing the guarantee that the PT, who's always under pressure to produce, is spending adequate time, because he has to supervise the other assistive personnel. So it kind of makes me wonder if the PT will have the proper time that he should, by accepting the responsibility, will be able to do it and give the student the proper education from first-hand hands-on treatment.
Yeah, I mean, I can see those scenarios, but I can also, you know, like I've had the experience where that happens just fine. And I guess one thing, other Arizona is somewhat unique, is that they allow assistive personnel who are not certified or licensed to actually treat people. And that kind of blew me away when I came to Arizona. What, you let that tech do that? Are you kidding me? You know, in Arkansas, it's a PT or a PTA or a PT student or a PTA student. Not some person off the street that I could train and let them put their hands on patients. But that's pretty unique to Arizona. It's kind of scary to tell you the truth.
But it's also the PT's responsibility. You know, if he puts someone treating someone else, no matter what it is, his license is on the line.
I don't disagree with you, but I'm saying that student going in there has already had some training, some education, versus someone who just comes in off the street that a PTA trains. Well, and that my license is on the line right there too.
Yeah, but they're not going to do manual manipulation, for example.
So let's change that.
So I guess
We
obviously have some constraints. I mean, we're talking about something that in reality our hands are tied at the moment. So we can't even discuss possible rules. We could probably try something in the next legislative period, but even that might run into problems, because if we pass a statute and can't develop rules for it, then that's kind of problematic. Are you advocating that we ought to address all supervision issues together? So eliminating techs and assistants and replacing them with students?
No.
So
no.
I don't think that's, I mean, he was looking at me asking that question, so I'll respond to that. I'm advocating that you take a good hard look at it.
At what?
At the supervision in general. And
which
includes assistive personnel, and also, because of the policy, includes students. And I'm advocating that the board take a solid look at it to see if that we can actually do what we need to do as far as educators in Arizona to produce the highest quality product that we can.
Mark, I have a question, and a technical question. Maybe this would go to legal counsel, but...
I'm not commenting.
Well, at the bottom of substantive policies, there's a added paragraph.
Pause. Can you identify yourself, please?
Yes, I'm Rebecca Carpenter.
Thank you.
there's a clause at the bottom that talks about, you know, if those who disagree with the policy, you know, want to challenge it, you know, legally, or, I mean, even refers to something that talks about injunctive relief. But are those used? Are those used by groups that would challenge a substantive policy? And is that something that this group, these educators, could consider, you know, to challenge that? And how does that process actually play out?
I suspect you have to talk to your legal counsel about whether that applies or doesn't apply, and not drag our AG into such a discussion.
Okay.
My client is the board.
I will make one
My
more
client is the board.
I will make one more comment just on public safety, is that I think everybody on the board here has been on long enough to know that the number one issue that we deal with is inappropriate supervision. Mm-hmm. And my concern is that the farther away we move the skilled person from patient care, the more complaints we're going to see and the more danger to the public that might occur. So if we suddenly have a physical therapist supervising three students and three personnel, and now there's six, how much can that physical therapist use their skill and license to actually help the patients that are on, that they are responsible for at any given moment? That's my first concern, is that we move that skilled person farther away. Coupled with the fact, my second concern is that the majority of physical therapists are employees and not independent practice owners, which means they feel that they have, because I take this question every day, they feel that they do not have the power to counter their employers. When they say take seven students, they'll do it because they're afraid that they'll be fired if they don't. And to say that you believe that the physical therapist will automatically stand up on their morals and values and say, no, that's not right, I guarantee you we see that case over and over and over again, where they feel they do not have the power, they will make the decision. Yes, they are going to be disciplined for it, but because the environment is that way, and I just have some concerns about how far away do we want to move the most skilled person away from the patients to which they are providing services. Excuse me.
So I don't disagree with your concern at all. As you were speaking, you know, I was wondering, those cases that you see and those supervisory issues that you see, how many of those have involved students in those issues?
Many over the last couple of years. Yeah. And you can go back and look at the minutes and see, but there have been three, maybe more.
I mean, I would be interested in seeing that as compared to how many times the board has asked somebody to go to a documentation course or something like that.
Well, that's a discipline, not necessarily. You're mixing up what you're talking about. So the documentation course is an actual discipline that the board implies, but the actual allegations of inappropriate mm-hmm. supervision would be conclusions of law.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I just wanted to speak. You guys are talking about, you know, different models, and I do agree. You know, we would like to move to models that are being used now, and our hands are tied on that. But I'm going to speak for a second to a different perspective, and that was, as a naturopathic physician, I was more in the physician model of supervision, and I've supervised students and obviously went through PT, you know, supervision also. But I felt like we had like a 5-to-1 model, and as a student who already held a license and was like super nervous anyway, it was still a good model. And I know there are going to be bad apples, and we're going to have people come before the board. And I don't care what the model is, we're going to have people come before the board. But I think I would like to see us move to a model that we know is a better model, or at least appears to be a better model for education, and that maybe we can tie some numbers around it if we look across the states and see what's being done and actually look closer at some of the other models that physicians and nurses are using. I would love to see this just entertained to see where we could take it.
I encourage you to do all that research background work and bring it back.
We'll do it.
Just one voice that's maybe not represented on this panel, but that I heard when we discussed this with the faculty, is a PT-PTA student interaction.
Oh, that'd be great.
That the model doesn't really allow, you know, for a PT and PTA student to be in the same clinical situation very well, where the physical therapist can get used to, as a student, as a you know, intern, supervising PTAs and the PTA student being supervised by a PT student. So that was one thing I thought was unique and maybe something that would, that you could consider as a reason for relaxing some of this as well.
Good point.
I think it depends also on the clinical site. I can only speak for our clinical site. We try to pair up PT students with PTA students so that they are working together in acute care hospital setting.
Yeah.
So I think it just depends on the practice and setting, you know, and probably the mm-hmm. the number of therapists that there are available to take students.
Okay. I guess just the last comment, and again, I appreciate y'all having this discussion.